Welcome to More Life, the Reentry Podcast, where we explore the transformative journey of reentry after incarceration. I'm your host, Venkivia Garner. Each week, we bring you powerful interviews with experts in the field and the voices of those who have lived through the experience. Our mission is to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and personal stories by shedding light on the challenges and triumphs faced by formerly incarcerated individuals. We explore the latest research, policies, and practices while also hearing firsthand accounts from those who've been impacted. Join us as we uncover the realities of reentry, challenge misconceptions, and inspire hope. Whether you're a professional working in the legal system, a family member, an advocate, or someone navigating reentry yourself, More Life the Reentry Podcast is here to inform, inspire, and ignite change. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of More Life, the Reentry Podcast. Today is our season finale of Civic Redemption, Empowering the Formerly Incarcerated Vote. Throughout this season, we've explored the multifaceted challenges and triumphs surrounding voting rights for formerly incarcerated individuals. Today, I'm hoping that we can bring it all together with a powerful discussion about civic power, talking about what it means, how to harness it, and how we can continue to push forward. Before we jump into our topic today, I do want to give a brief recap of what we've explored throughout this season. So at the beginning of our season, we started off talking with Brother Robert Lilly, and Brother Lilly reminded us of the importance of understanding the history of felony disenfranchisement and the history of mass incarceration. And from that, I was able to lead a conversation in the historical roots of these policies, and Dr. Rivers and Dr. Haydu were able to bring that information about how does felony disenfranchisement impact marginalized communities? How does it impact people who are non-citizens? Discussing more of the racial implications of felony disenfranchisement. From there, we were able to move on and talk about some of the systemic barriers created by felony disenfranchisement laws. If you don't remember, Dr. Mark Meredith talked to us about what barriers do people particularly encounter when they try to exercise their voting rights, or what barriers exist. We also had some opportunity to hear from individuals with lived experiences, whether that's them fighting for their right to vote in their state, if that's them working in organizations that organize around voting rights for system impacted individuals. So Desmond Mead, we were able to talk to Raheem Buford from Unheard Voices and hear about all the work that they are doing in this area to expand voting rights for system impacted individuals. And then lastly, we were able to talk about what are the ongoing needs and efforts that are being done to expand voting rights. So we heard from Chicago Votes, who was able to tell us the importance of civic education and provide us with practical information that individuals, specifically those who are system impacted, need to know about voter eligibility and about voter rights. We also was able to hear from Dr. Justin Smith, who talked to us about the importance of civic engagement and how civic engagement is more than just voting. And Avalon and Nicole Porter added onto those conversations and talking to us about what does the future of voting look like for system impacted individuals, and what more can we do as individuals and as supporters and as advocates and those who are system impacted to expand voting rights. So that's just a brief recap of what all that we have explored throughout this season. If you have not had the opportunity to listen to this season, I highly encourage you, go back, listen to those episodes. We have 12 powerful episodes for you, and there's a lot of information to take away from the episodes and the conversation that we've had this season. But today, what I want to do first, before we actually get into our topic of civic power, I want us to just reflect on how we can channel everything that we've learned into tangible civic power, using our voices, our votes, and our action to create change. So there's a couple things that I have taken away from this season. But first, let's discuss four takeaways from our current season. Number one, This question was brought to me, and so I really want to bring it to you all. Is voting a right or a privilege? So I took some time to really think about this question and to really think about what a right is and what a privilege is. And when I researched, what I found was that rights are entitlements that cannot be legally denied. So for example, freedom of speech. No one can take that away from us. No one can take that away from you. Privileges, on the other hand, are conditional and can be taken away from you. It's that classic line that we see in things that say subject to change. That's what a privilege is. So some privileges can be granted and some can be withheld. So, like another example, everyone has the right to education. However, access to private education is a privilege. So I started looking at what the difference between a right and a privilege is. And as I had conversations with guests, activists, lobbyists, system impacted people, this question was continuously raised of, is voting a right or a privilege? So then I bring the question to you, because in the United States, unfortunately, voting rights are deemed a privilege to qualified citizens. I'm not sure what qualified means or how they operationalize that, but that's what they say, is that voting or eligibility to vote is a privilege to qualified citizens. And what we do know and what we've learned throughout this season is that there are approximately 4.4 million individuals, and even more than that, of people with a felony conviction who are stripped of their opportunity to vote and participate in civic life. These individuals are casted as second-class citizens and told that they can't participate because they have a criminal record. And many states adopt this approach, this perspective of that voting is a privilege. And so one of the questions, like I said, I really wanted to bring to you all, and I really want you to think about, is voting a right or a privilege? No one denies that women, men, activists, people of color, or system impacted people fought for these rights. And we live in a democracy, and democracy is said that it's the right to govern. The right to govern lies within the people being us. So we hold the power, and therefore we make the decisions about the laws, policies, and even the leadership that undertakes our states and our communities. So when I ask you the question, is voting a right or a privilege? I'm not just asking that question. I'm also asking, what does democracy mean to you? How do you define what is truly just? That's the first takeaway. The second takeaway is information is key. Many times throughout this season and the conversations that I've had with individuals, one thing that we have consistently talked about is that a lot of people who are system impacted are confused about whether they can vote or not. And Dr. Meredith reminds us of a case where Crystal Mason was an individual who was misinformed, not informed. Number two, information is key. Consistently throughout this season, and particularly in the episodes where we talked about barriers to voting, one of the most common barriers that we discussed was misinformation and voter confusion. Laws are different all across states regarding eligibility to vote for people who are system impacted. And there's a lot of false information about the eligibility of individuals with felony convictions and whether they're able to vote or not. And that makes people reluctant to engage to vote because it's confusing. It's confusing. And Dr. Mark Meredith reminds us of a case of Crystal Mason, a system impacted individual who attempted to vote and was brought up on voter fraud charges for attempting to cast a ballot in the 2016 election, even though Miss Mason had not been informed of her rights to vote or ineligibility to vote. Unfortunately, that feeling of not being informed or not having information isn't unique to Miss Mason, and it's a experience that a lot of individuals that are system impacted may have encountered. And throughout this season, one thing that I've learned and one thing that I hope our audience takes away is that information is key. One of our guests said it best of to inform you is to arm you. Mr. Tucson Daniel said that from Chicago Votes. When we supply individuals with information, then they can act accordingly and make decisions for themselves in the way that they would like to. But people have to have the information. So when we're talking about voting rights, we have to educate individuals on what their voting rights are in their states if they are system impacted. If they're not system impacted, we have to educate them in other ways of how they can become involved. And yes, we're talking about right now, we're talking about, yes, let's educate people on voting rights, the legal processes and how they work, legislative processes, but that's not all we're talking about. We need people to be educated on history, understanding where these policies and practices come from, and the impact that they are having today. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about information is key. Yes, we need people to know their rights as well. We also need people to know history. So I think that's a very important takeaway for our audience members and for me in general too, when I'm doing this work, making sure that I have the most accurate information and that I'm communicating it to you all in the most accurate and updated way. So remember, information is key. And if you feel like you're missing information or you don't know how to get it, let's start asking questions. Let's start finding ways to get that information. And then let's figure out a way to use it. Number three. Civic engagement extends beyond just voting. So, a lot of times when we think about civic engagement, we often think about voting. And many of us just casted a ballot for the 2024 presidential election and other elections that were being ran in your local and states. And that's the tendency to what we think about. But what I've learned throughout this season and what many of our guests have emphasized is that civic engagement extends beyond that. Voting is one aspect of it, but there's other ways to be civically involved. And when we're talking about individuals that are system impacted, some may have the right, depending on where they live at, to vote in their state. Example, Illinois, individuals may have that right. If they are not incarcerated, that looks very different for individuals who may live in Arkansas and do not regain that right to vote until their parole, probation, or supervision has ended with the state. And so, if voting is the only aspect of civic engagement, that doesn't leave opportunity for these other individuals to be involved. And I'm here to tell you, and my guests were here to tell you, that it extends beyond that. It's more than just voting. There's other ways for people to be involved, especially if they don't have that right. They don't have the ability to be able to vote in their state. And they've talked about a lot of different ways in which you do that. And I'm not going to get into specifics here because later on, I want you will dive more into what are some ways in which you can do that? But I do want us to understand as a takeaway that we got to think beyond just voting. We got to think, how am I going to be active in my community? How am I going to contribute to the laws and the policies that are set in the neighborhoods and the states? in which I reside in? What efforts am I going to put in to have a healthy community that I can live in, that my children can live in? That's what civic engagement is. And number four, are the US policies towards felony disenfranchisement extreme compared to other countries? The Sentencing Project, Human Rights Watch, and ACLU published a paper this year called Out of Step: US Policy and Voting Rights in Global Perspective. I'll put it in the description box so you all can read it and have access to it. I think it's a really important paper to read when we're talking about the policies that we have in place regarding voting rights and even more general than that, the policies that impact people with felony convictions or a criminal record. I really do encourage you to read this paper, conduct your own research, gain your own understanding. But I'm going to, here's a short synopsis of what I've learned throughout this season, talking to individuals. And if you want to hear more about it, I do encourage you to go listen to The Future of Voting with Nicole Porter. But basically, this paper highlights that the practices and the policies regarding voting rights for system impacted or those with a criminal record are undeniably restrictive. And the United States is actually an outlier compared to other countries. We're the leading nation in imprisonment, and there are insurmountable consequences if you have a criminal conviction. We've talked about that in other episodes, just the amount of barriers and the consequences of having a felony conviction, from housing to employment and et cetera. But when you look at other nations and when you look at other countries, people with felony convictions are either not denied the right to vote, or their rights are only denied on certain circumstances. The policies aren't as restrictive as they are in the United States. So then this brings up the question, are this brings up the question of, are our policies extreme? I'm interested in knowing what you all's thoughts are. And I hope that you all would share them with us and let us know what are you thinking when you hear this question that I'm asking you. So those are my four takeaways for this season. One, is voting a privilege or a right? Two, information is key. Three, civic engagement extends beyond just voting. And four, are the US policies toward felony disenfranchisement extreme compared to other countries? I think these are some really great questions and some really great takeaways for us to explore more of what we're learning about felony disenfranchisement and voting rights. And in my own conversations, I've had to do some research and gain some better perspective on my own end as well. Because if I'm being very transparent, initially when I approached this season and I started developing it, I came from this mindset of discussing restoration of voting rights after incarceration. But through these conversations and asking myself these questions that I'm asking you all, I learned that the movement and the campaigns about voting rights for system impacted individuals is not about restoring voting rights after incarceration, but expanding voting rights regardless of incarceration status. And it was through me asking these questions to myself and really sitting down and thinking about them and taking on some of the practical tips that our guest offered in their episodes. And so, in continuation of working towards joining and growing this movement, that and to work towards joining and growing this movement it made me think about a broader conversation that needs to be had about how do we cultivate civic power in the communities of which we reside in? How do we cultivate civic power among those who are system impacted, families of system impacted individuals, or advocates of criminal justice reform? So really what our discussion is about today is about civic power, what it means, how do we harness it, and how do we continue to push for progress? So let's get into the first one. What does it even mean? When I think about civic power, I think about collective action. I think about the collective ability for individuals and communities to shape policies and decisions that impact their everyday lives. At the core of it, civic power is about participation, it's about influence, and it's about creating systems that truly reflect the will of all people. And when I say all people, I mean that includes system impacted individuals. And I imagine for system impacted individuals that civic power, especially if we're talking about in the context of civic engagement and voter rights, it's about more than just reclaiming the right to vote. It's about more than just casting a ballot. It's about reclamation of dignity and citizenship. Because as we said earlier, many people, if not all people, with a felony conviction are casted as second-class citizens. So that's what civic power is. And how do we harness it is a different conversation. And I think a part of that conversation, one, we have to recognize what we stated earlier is that voting isn't just an individual act. We have to extend beyond just voting. So, yes, it's very important to register to vote if you can. It's important to continue to educate our communities on voting rights. For those who are system impacted and were able to vote this year, congratulations. I'm very excited and I'm very happy for you all. And let's continue to fight to expand those rights to our other system impacted individuals that may live in states where they aren't eligible. And if you're not eligible to vote, join the movement. So you can harness civic power through community organizing, working with the coalitions that advocate for issues that are important to you and related to criminal justice reform. You can host your own grassroots campaigns to mobilize support. People do that all the time. And I think another important and a very critical piece of it is making sure that we amplify the voices of those that are impacted. System impacted individuals, families, we need you all in this movement. It's vital to have your stories. It's vital to hear your perspectives. And it's important for those of us that are advocates and that are working in the movement as well to center those who have been impacted. Because when we do that, then we can create change. Then we can make movement. And then we're cultivating power. Desmond Mead, I don't know if you all got the opportunity to listen to that episode, but I do highly encourage you to listen to The Power of Voting with Desmond Mead, because Desmond Mead is an example of an individual who is system impacted, who led an incredible fight that expanded voting rights for 1.4 million people in Florida, where Florida is a state that where there's over 4 million people that are disenfranchised due to a felony conviction or convictions. Mr. Mead led with success in efforts to pass the Florida Amendment 4, which restored voting rights for over 1.4 million people with felony convictions. His efforts are not only a reminder that success comes from the mobilization of citizens, but also that centering the experiences of those system impacted in this fight is how we move towards transformative change. So that's how we harness it. We have to get involved. We have to move beyond just voting, and we have to look at what opportunities are there in our communities for us to become active, even if we can't participate at the level of voting. And it's through these efforts that we can strengthen our democratic participation and we can educate and mobilize people. So if we want to continue to push for progress, we have to continue to address systemic barriers. So that means we have to continue to address voter suppression. We have to continue to tackle and address policies that are related to felony disenfranchisement. And we must continue to invest in civic education. We need more programming like Chicago Votes, programming that will empower individuals to understand and learn how to navigate the political system. We need organizations such as Unheard Voices, such as the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, such as the Sentencing Projects. These are organizations, coalitions, organizers that can mobilize advocates, system impacted individuals to take action. And they do that through outreach. And then we have to continue to push for legal and policy changes that continue to disadvantage those with a criminal record. This is how we continue to push for progress. And this is how we cultivate civic power. And so I'll end off with this, is that civic power is a continuous process of collective action and education. And if we leverage the tools that we have, we form the alliance with the organizations and the individuals that we need to, and we continue to drive inclusive participation, then individuals and communities can start to challenge the injustice that they face in their communities and contribute to building a more equitable society. So, if you're system impacted, a family member, an activist, or an advocate, I ask you, what's next for you? How are you going to build civic power in your community? So, whether it's through volunteering in local nonprofits, organizing neighborhood and community projects related to criminal justice reform, attending the town hall meetings, sharing your story, or just providing educational opportunities for individuals, how are you going to get involved? For our system impacted individuals, remember, if you do not have the right to vote, there are other ways for you to become involved. Change doesn't happen overnight, but as we've seen in this season, every small act builds momentum. Before we wrap up, I want to thank all of our guests this season who've shared their stories, their expertise, and their vision for a better future. And thank you, our listeners, for tuning in and being a part of this movement. I also want to thank the More Life the Reentry podcast team for developing and creating such a amazing lineup of episodes. If there's one takeaway from this season, it's this: civic power belongs to all of us. Together, we can create a democracy that reflects and serves everyone, regardless of their past. So if you've been inspired by this season, don't let it stop here. Visit us on our Instagram at More Life the Reentry Podcast, where you can find resources, ways to get involved, and you can take our listener survey to tell us how we can continue this work in future seasons. Be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it, and let's keep building this movement together. Until next time, stay engaged, stay informed, and remember, the power is yours.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of More Life the Reentry Podcast. We hope today's conversation has provided valuable insights and inspiration for your own journey or the work you're doing to support reentry. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to bring you powerful stories and expert opinions. For more resources, updates, and to connect with our community, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at More Life The Reentry Podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or would like to share your own story, feel free to reach out to us at the email provided in the description box. Remember, reentry is a journey, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep moving forward. This is More Life, the Reentry Podcast, signing off. The content shared on More Life, the Reentry Podcast, is for informational and educational purposes only. The views expressed by guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast. While we strive for accuracy, content may be based on research, personal experiences, or opinions. Research is subject to change as new data emerges, and content may also vary from person to person. This podcast does not provide professional advice or recommendations. Listeners should consult with appropriate professionals for guidance. Please note that some discussions may also have sensitive topics, therefore, listener discretion is advised. This episode of More Life The Reentry Podcast is funded by the Paul Simon Democracy Award. We thank you for supporting our mission to bridge the gap between scholarly insights and lived experiences.